This is a Radio Charwell original podcast.
We love science!
So sport's quite interesting. Yeah, that's very true. Yeah, good to sit in front of the TV all day. No, so
also, I've done a lot of things. So I'm kind of preparing patients before surgery and taking care of them after surgery.
Wow!
I'm doing observations.
Science
to
be
explained.
Why don't you give me a
mystery?
What do you think?
Healthcare, mental health, vaccines, and
science and beyond.
This is Alex, and you might know me from the children's program, so the Weekend for Everything show. And I will actually be trying to branch out and create my own kind of radio program. And this is Science and Beyond. So, what is this show about? I created this show to be able to talk about different science topics that are really interesting, but also to kind of see how they are applied in a real life setting. So kind of giving you the best of both worlds, and I'll be kind of splitting every episode into the science part first, and then its real life application, whether that be interviewing NHS staff or anyone that kind of has relevant experience of the topic. And for those of you that don't know me, who am I? So my name is Alex, I am 19, and I have just finished my A-levels and I'm on a gap year working as a nursing assistant, and I am applying for medicine. I have done 3 interviews so far, and now I'm waiting for their responses, so we'll see how it turns out. Now let's dive in into what this specific program is about. So I cannot think of an even more fitting topic to talk about than cardiology for my first ever episode of Science and Beyond. And I really like cardiology because when I was doing my work experience in order to apply for medicine, I just thought to myself that during A-level biology, I didn't think I learned enough about the heart, and it was a topic that I really, really liked. And so I did an online cardiology course and I learned so much, and I'm really excited to share everything with you guys. So let's dive in. What even is cardiology? Well, cardiology is all about the heart and blood vessels. It is a very relevant topic because the British Heart Foundation say that 170,000 die from heart and circulatory diseases in the UK every year, and that is 26% of deaths, which is very, very high. And on the other hand, if you compare cancer, that is 167,000 deaths each year annually in the UK. So they're really going neck to neck. The course actually talks about risk factors and then on to managing kind of different heart diseases and their prevention. So what kind of risk factors are there for cardiovascular diseases? Well, there is hypertension, diabetes, high cholesterol, smoking, and there are quite a few others, but those are the main ones. Let's have a look in more detail into how these risk factors can actually cause cardiovascular diseases. So let's talk about smoking first. Smoking is really interesting to me because of the fact that there is nicotine involved, and nicotine actually is a natural insecticide, so it kills insects. But, on the other hand, it has a completely different effect on us. When it's first used, it actually increases our concentration and focus, but then if you use it too much, then you have these negative consequences. So it's really interesting. And how it causes cardiovascular diseases is that it can increase platelet activation, so there's more blood clotting. It can cause inflammation and endothelial dysfunction. So the endothelium is kind of the inner layer of your blood vessels. And if there is endothelial dysfunction, you can develop these plaques called atheromas. And then when they break off, they can cause a blood clot. And then that can lead to, for example, a myocardial infarction. But another way is that it reduces oxygen availability because carbon monoxide binds irreversibly to the red blood cells, meaning there's a higher demand on the heart to kind of deliver oxygen because there is a lower supply. Another way that smoking can contribute to cardiovascular diseases is that it can stimulate the sympathetic nervous system, which can increase blood pressure. And then that, well, hypertension / high blood pressure alone can contribute quite greatly to cardiovascular diseases as well. And fun fact, male smokers live 12 years less than the average male. And female smokers live on average 11 years less than females that don't smoke. Another interesting risk factor is cholesterol. So cholesterol is it's a special type of fat, and how it can contribute to cardiovascular diseases if there is too much of the bad cholesterol, too much of both the good and the bad cholesterol, that can kind of lead to the formation of those plaques that I talked about earlier, those atheromas. And then, as I said, they can kind of rupture and then cause a blood clot, and then that blood clot can stop the blood flow from going through that blood vessel. And the University of Zurich, which does this course, has actually said that 80% of cholesterol in the blood can only be influenced by the liver and only 20% by diet. So there is a big misconception that the cholesterol in your blood can be changed a lot by diet, but truly it is mainly up to your liver, which is why many people with a high cholesterol take all of these different type of medications such as statins, ezetimibes, and a new kind of medication which is called PCSK9 inhibitors. And if you do want to kind of have a look at the very last one, I have a really good article recommendation for you called PCSK9 inhibitors by the Heart UK, the cholesterol charity, and that explains kind of how they work and what they are and the research going on. So, we've talked about the risk factors. Why don't we talk about one of the most well-known cardiovascular diseases, a myocardial infarction. So, what is a myocardial infarction? It's in layman terms called a heart attack, and the symptoms of that are chest pain, radiating pain to the left arm, sweating, nausea, dizziness, and some of the first measures for a heart attack include aspirin and heparin to kind of decrease the amount of blood clots formed, oxygen if the person isn't getting enough oxygen, and morphine for the pain. However, if you go into an ER and you have chest pain, a heart attack isn't going to be the only kind of diagnosis you may get. There are many different reasons why you might be having chest pain. For example, a pulmonary embolism, so there's a blood clot in your lungs. You can have an aortic dissection, which is a tear in the aorta, which is very fatal because the aorta supplies your whole body, so it goes into your systemic circulation, and it is really, really fatal if it is ruptured. Now let's talk about how a heart attack would be diagnosed. So there are two types of heart attacks. You have the STEMI, and you have the non-STEMI. So a STEMI is when the ST segment of an ECG is elevated. So you know how your heart gives off a certain rhythm that you can record. So that specific section is elevated, and it's elevated because there is a complete blockage of the coronary artery. And on the other hand, you have the non-STEMI, which is when there is a partial blockage. So first, you look at the symptoms, then you look at the ECG and see if the ST segment is elevated or not. And then you can look at special biomarkers and also do an angiography, which is a really cool imaging technique to kind of locate where a blood vessel is occluded. Now, let's hear how all of this can be applied in practice. Let's hear from our two nurses. Okay, so what is your name?
I'm Tay. I'm a cardiac nurse here at John Radcliffe. Work on cardiology ward.
So what do you think kind of cardiology is about, and how is this ward kind of different from other wards? Because I work in a short stay unit, so yeah. It is very fast paced, but I would imagine the patients here stay for a bit longer.
Actually, interestingly, we have quite a big amount of turnaround here as well, so patients get discharged and admitted quite quickly as well, because people are needing acute cardiac treatment. So basic, obviously, is all about the heart. So we do loads of different things to do with people who either have come in with a heart attack, an MI, or they need a device, or they have an issue with a valve. And like a basic thing people often say, to make it into layman's terms, is like there's either some issue with the plumbing or the electrics of the heart. But actually, yeah, we are a very big unit. We're 41 beds. So the amount of admissions and discharges we get are very quick, actually. Some people stay in a bit longer, but it's usually quite quick.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And I was wondering, what do you think the best part about your role is? What do you really like here?
Actually, cardiology can have different types of patients, but often we also get really nice stories where people come in and they're really scared. They've been told they've had a heart attack. In their mind, they've known this is the worst thing ever. And it is an emergency that needs to be treated quickly. But actually, the quicker people come in with those sorts of issues, we treat them quite quickly. They go on home to live like pretty much the same as what their standard was before. Not in every case, but in a lot of cases. So that's a really nice thing to see, is that people often... Cardiology is more of an optimistic area where people often get their treatments. And the other thing is that, from the nurse's side of view, is that it's a really opportunity to learn things in more depth. We do a lot on ECGs, on heart rhythms. Every area obviously has its speciality, but we get a chance to really look into the more sciencey bits behind it. So that's quite a privilege on this ward.
Wow, that sounds great. I was also wondering, what kind of patients do you see here more often? So is it both with an MI, or is it...
It really, really varies, and sometimes we get more of one thing than others. So we have a congenital team, which knows that there's congenital consultants who know patients who are born with heart issues and complications. And if they're going through something later, they come to us. So they're often younger. So once they're done with the pediatric side of wards, they start coming to us. So sometimes we have more of them, and sometimes we have less of them on the ward. We have MIs, so different types of heart attacks. We have people who come in with the electrics of not right, so they need devices like pacemakers or internal defibrillators. And then we have patients who have had treatment in the past, and then their heart's taken a few knocks, and then they have heart failure. So it's managing their symptoms, because then they have a chronic condition. So it's often a big mix. And those patients often have issues with the structure of their heart. So they may have valve complications as well. So different procedures for heart valves. We have got quite a range of people who come in with different cardiac issues.
So every day is a little bit different.
Do see like the same sort of similar things, but at the same time there's a lot of change in it as well.
So I have actually observed an ECG yesterday when I was at work, and honestly I vaguely understand how it works, and I don't think I'm still confident enough to do it myself. So can you kind of explain a little bit how it works?
So how to explain, an ECGs always look really overwhelming, and to be honest, I reckon you learn something new about an ECG almost, you know, every couple of weeks. You think you know all about it, and then somebody tells you something else. So there's definitely people who know much more than me about ECGs. Mm-hmm. But the real basic is that you have, obviously, when someone takes an ECG, they put 10 leads all over you.
Yeah.
But we often call it a 12-lead ECG.
Yeah, that's what I was confused about. How does that
so work? So two of them work together
mm-hmm.
in two different areas to give you a different angle of the electrics of the heart.
Yeah.
So you're actually getting 12 different electrical angles of the heart, if that makes sense.
Oh my gosh, okay.
So you have the normal, you have 10 leads, but two of them are working together to get you a different angle of the heart.
Mm-hmm.
So an ECG shows on correlation, takes the electrics that are happening in your heart and shows us your heart rhythm.
Okay.
So in normal people, you have a whole conduction system in the heart. I don't know how much you want me to get into it, but you have the top part of the heart contracts.
Yeah.
So there's a pathway of electricity in the heart and the ECG corresponds to what's happening. But then ECGs can show us lots of different things. So it shows us the basic, which is like a normal sinus rhythm, is it?
Yeah.
PQRST, which shows you the atrium contracting, the ventricle contracting, and the ventricle relaxing, which is just the normal basic heart rhythm.
Mm-hmm.
But then sometimes if someone comes in with a heart attack, we can see that on an ECG because it shows us the electrics are not quite right because part of the blood is not, I'm sorry, part of the heart is not getting blood.
Yeah.
So it will show a term called elevation, which is slightly more complicated.
So I know that there are, I think, two different types. There's like a STEMI and a non-STEMI. So kind of what is the difference in that?
So usually a STEMI is treated as more of an emergency. Mm-hmm. An NSTEMI is also an emergency. They're both types of, you know, types of heart attacks. But in a STEMI, they're patients who have, we typically say they've got a really bad chest pain story.
Mm.
So some people have sort of angina that goes on for a while, or when they do something it gets worse, when they sit down it relaxes.
Mm-hmm.
A STEMI is something that really wakes someone up or stops someone and they feel everything that is, something's not right.
Yeah.
The typical, like, you know, elephant on the chest.
Mm-hmm.
And what our ECG shows is something called ST elevation.
Yeah.
And that's why it's called a STEMI. It's an ST elevation myocardial infarction.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like.
Mm-hmm. And then we have the ECG, sorry, shows ST. And what is actually showing is that the artery, which has the issue, is completely occluded. So there's no blood at all getting to one area of the heart. So that needs to be opened immediately. So we have a cath lab downstairs, which would open that artery if someone was having STEMI 24/7.
Yeah.
So whether that's 2 a.m, whatever time. And then an NSTEMI is someone who has a chest pain story. Something's not right. Maybe their markers potentially show that the heart in their blood, that something's not right in the heart. But when they do an ECG, there's no ST elevation.
Yeah.
And sometimes the pain can kind of come in waves. So we still do an angiogram when we look into the arteries, but it doesn't have to happen at 2 a.m. necessarily.
Yeah,
it can happen listed as a normal procedure to have a look. And normally that artery is... it's got maybe a little bit of occlusion,
so
but not completely. But not completely.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I don't want to get too kind of scientific on this topic, but I am curious about the kind of biomarkers. So I know there's troponin, I think, and what was the other one?
Troponin is, to be honest, the main one that we use. There's another.
I can't remember the name because I did like a short online cardiology course.
Yes.
But yeah,
I can't remember that off the top of my head. That's okay. There's one that shows where people with heart failure as well. It starts with a B now.
That's okay.
But troponin is what we mainly look at to show that the heart's had some kind of event. Mm-hmm. So troponin doesn't always necessarily mean that they've had a heart attack like a STEMI.
Yeah.
It could be anything that the heart's, like an issue the heart's had. It could be an infection in the heart, some kind of thing the heart's going through will release troponin. So it's not always in a heart attack that it, like a STEMI, that it would release troponin.
Okay, thank you very much, Tay. That was such an informative short lesson. And next up we have our guest speaker number 2. Okay, hello, who am I talking to?
Hello, my name's Rebecca. I'm one of the deputy sisters on cardiology ward.
Yeah, nice to meet you. So what I do want to ask you is, what do you like about this ward and what do you like about cardiology?
I think the main thing that stands out is we're all very much team players. and we all get on with each other. And I think that's very important actually on an acute ward, is that you have a really good team. But although it can be quite challenging as well, it's really good that you've got someone that you can go to and sort of offload a little bit without feeling like you're going to be judged.
Yeah.
But I think that's a really positive thing to have.
So we have a really good team here then, yeah? That's good. Yeah, I work in a short stay unit, and I would say the team is very supportive there as well. And it's only been 2 months since I actually started, but I feel like my team is just really good. I haven't met such nice people yet, and it's just, I love it. And I also want to ask you, what kind of patients do you see here?
So it can be unpredictable. We see all types of patients, really, from varying from sort of 17, 18 year olds all the way right up to the elderly population.
Yeah.
And the sort of types of things that we see, obviously we've got the primary line here for the heart attack patients, which are brought in by the ambulance crews. We have a lot of endocarditis patients as well, which is infections of the valves. Heart failure tends to be predominantly all of our patients have a degree of heart failure. We do things like ICDs, pacemakers, TAVI valves. We do ablations, like VT ablations, AF ablations.
Can you kind of explain what that is? Because I have no clue.
So basically when someone's in an irregular rhythm, so it's not your typical P wave, QRS, T wave, it tends to look a lot more different when someone's in a faster or an irregular rate. And then what they do is cryotechnology to basically locate where the defective cell is giving off that extra beat, and they use cryotechnology to sort of burn that cell to stop it from chucking out those extra beats that shouldn't be there. And to help regulate the heart again. Because as we know, a lot of our patients get very short of breath and it affects their quality of life.
Yeah. And I think the key word for shortness of breath is called dyspnea, is that right? Yeah, I think that's kind of a term that I recognise. And I was wondering, what kind of favourite part do you like learning about in cardiology? Do you have like a topic you would want to maybe look into a bit more?
I mean, I do like some of the management side, because I tend to, I do three shifts a week, and only one of those at the moment tends to be patient facing. But I think if I were to pick one aspect, it would either have to be heart failure or endocarditis, I'd probably go.
Okay, so we have talked a little bit about ablation, right? So can you talk a little bit more about heart failure and how that works, and then after endocarditis as well?
So heart failure is a term basically that describes the inability for the heart to pump effectively. So as a result, the heart muscle itself could get very sloppy, and then you get a buildup of fluid in the lower legs and just lower back, and then it can go to the lungs as well. So it can really affect, again, quality of life.
And then it causes the breathing, doesn't it?
Yeah, so you've got different degrees of heart failure. We go from being very plateaued, and then they'll have spikes, become acutely unwell, and they become very puffy, very fluid overloaded, come into hospital, and then they'll plateau again. So heart failure is very much a wave of ups and downs. Unfortunately, there is no cure. So obviously, once you are diagnosed, it's about managing your symptoms rather than curing your symptoms. But it's surprising, really, because we get even patients as young as in their 30s with heart failure, which actually, I think it's generally, the term is associated more with the elderly population.
Yeah, I see why.
There's
an
assumption, I think, but genetics plays a huge part in that as well.
Yeah, for sure. And I was wondering, for heart failure, do patients tend to deteriorate very quickly, or do they just go through a wave of up and down? It's unpredictable.
So it can be over time. So depends sort of how far they are into their heart failure journey. So if they're more end stage heart failure, you will find that actually the trajectory is very poor, and it's just about managing can we get the symptoms down enough so that you're comfortable, rather than a be treated sort of a, it is for a long time. From the point that you're diagnosed, there's lots of ups and downs, and you will go through many, many admissions. You find the right sort of mix of medications that works for that person, then actually you can live with heart failure for a very long time.
So what kind of medications do you think are there, just like generally for heart failure?
Yeah, so
managing it?
We have diuretics. The most common one that we use is furosemide. We also have things like beta blockers, pump support medications. They help with every beat the heart to pump more effectively.
Yeah.
And then we usually try and take the workload off the heart as well by giving them some ACE inhibitors, like Orampril, for example, just to reduce their blood pressure.
Yeah.
Because we don't want too much workload on the heart itself.
So I think I roughly kind of recognise that. So do ACE inhibitors kind of... So I know there's the ACE... So it's an enzyme and it converts angiotensin 1 to angiotensin 2, if I remember correctly, from the RAS system, right?
Yeah. Yeah, you're going into very complex territory there.
I'm just trying to like remember what I learned from my cardiology course. It's just all...
Yeah,
and we were also going to talk about endocarditis, so to do with valves, is that right?
It's effectively... inflammation or an infection around a valve in the heart.
Yeah.
So it can generally stem from oral cleanliness. So if you have an infection in the gum or the tooth, the easiest route to the heart is through the gum, through the mouth.
That's so interesting.
So the infection would travel through the bloodstream in your mouth directly to the heart and stick to a valve and cause an infection, endocarditis.
Gosh, yeah.
And they're generally on patients who need a PICC line, who need antibiotics for a long period of time, such as 6 weeks. And a lot of these patients then need to go for open heart surgery to have those valves replaced.
Okay, yeah. So I know there's kind of two different types of valves. So there's the one between the atria and the ventricles, and then there's aortic
aortic valve. They tend to be the most common, I would say, we probably see on the ward for infections. And then you'll get the mitral valve, tricuspid valve infections as well. Generally those who are we do see some IV drug users, unfortunately, who have injected and then they get infection on the heart valve, but it tends to be the tricuspid valve due to the direction of the blood flow. Those patients, some have done well, but unfortunately I think the majority of them have a very poor outcome. Just based on their habits, really.
Okay, well, thank you so much for the talk. That was really interesting. I think we definitely discussed a lot about the scientific part as well, but I'm glad that I kind of learnt about it.
Science and beyond!